Well, I also thank you all for coming back. My presentation really ultimately is about mineral organic associations. That's what we're studying. The idea is that they contain up to 91% of total soil carbon. They have carbon turnover times that average four times longer than free organic matter. So mineral organic associations are an extremely important component of soil organic matter and carbon sequestration. On the right, we have a well-known model for how mineral organic associations might form. The idea here is that in this contact zone close to the mineral surface, you have, organic matter interacting directly with the surface. Then a little further out in this hydrophobic zone, you have organic matter that attached to the surface that interacts with itself and with other organic matter in solution. And as you move still further out into this kinetic zone, you have more exchangeable organic matter that essentially is more hydrophilic and usually interacts and exchanges with the solution. I think the big idea behind the model is that there's really no single binding mechanism, and there's a lot of support for that in all sorts of studies with all sorts of techniques. But we do see selective sorption reported as well. So really our research questions for this project were, what is the relative importance of selective versus non-selective sorption when mineral organic associations are formed, and what factors might influence this? Already there are a couple of publications out there that talk about mineral type affects the degree of sorptive fractionation. For instance, sorption is stronger, or selectivity is stronger on alumina than it is on kaolinite. We also saw concentration dependence. At lower concentrations, you see more selectivity. As concentrations go up, it starts to be more non-selective. So this study is really about what happens if you change the composition of the organic matter. How does that influence whether you have more or less selective fractionation? So the design of the study is basically that we created structural fractions from a dissolved organic matter sample using resin fractionation. Then we did sorption experiments with those fractions and a model sorbent, which was basically an iron-enriched reference clay at pH 3.5. The idea was we wanted different compositions and chemical properties in our structural fractions, and then we wanted really to stimulate cation bridging and electrostatic interactions with our sorbent, and we kept it at a low pH to minimize iron oxide formation, because metal oxides have been studied a lot more extensively. And the very last thing, we basically wanted to be able to extract the sorbed DOM and compare that to the original DOM solutions. In order to do that, we did TOC analysis to be able to quantitatively determine how much carbon sorbed from each of the samples to our sorbent. And we used Fourier transform ion cyclotron resonance mass spectrometry, or FTICRMS, to really get at, compositional changes before and after sorption. So this slide is really meant just to kind of show the power of FTICRMS. And this is our unfractionated sample. What we can really see in a range from 349.05 to 349.25 Daltons, so that's, one-fifth of a mass unit, we can see 29 peaks in this sample. If we look at one of the structural fractions, we see, another 27 peaks. 22 of them are the same, but at different abundances. So the real power of this technique is that you can determine abundances and accurately assign elemental compositions to extraordinarily complex mixtures, which is what natural organic matter is, and it's what petroleum hydrocarbons are, among other things. So the way we prepared the organic matter is we took composted biosolids. In this case, they were composted with 50% tree clippings, and we extracted them in water and filtered them to produce what we were calling anthropogenic DOM. Composted biosolids are a common soil amendment, so it made sense to use them. They've been reported to be similar to organic matter. They do have higher nitrogen content. And one of the big questions, and we'll see examples of it, is that they can also be impacted by anthropogenic contaminants. Then we took the anthropogenic DOM and we did a resin-based extraction, which I won't describe in detail, but it's a common technique. The goal was to produce, you know, four samples for absorption experiments. We have the original anthropogenic DOM, and we have three fractions, a hydrophilic neutral, a hydrophobic acid, and a hydrophobic neutral fraction. On the right here, I try to give some representative compounds for what you might see in these samples. The one on the top are linear alkyl benzyl sulfonates. We did see, it's an anionic surfactant, and we did see series of these in our anthropogenic DOM. The one on the bottom are sulfophenyl alkyl carboxylates. It's basically a derivative of the surfactant on top that shows some degradation. We did also see those in our sample. And the one on the right, N-acetylglucosamine, is a microbial cell wall component. We did detect this mass in all the samples, but we didn't do any form of, you know, run any reference standards or do anything to definitively state that that's present. It's just present at that mass at a high degree of accuracy. So those are the kind of compounds you might expect to see in each of the different fractions. For our sorption experiments, we took our model sorbent, added the DOM samples, and did batch equilibrium experiments at pH 3.5 for about 48 hours. Then we rinsed the samples and extracted the DOM with sodium hydroxide so that we could ultimately compare our original DOM samples to the sorbed DOM extracts. Back to the issue of anionic surfactants, these are what our unfractionated samples actually look like. The one on the left is the original solution, and the one on the right is the sorbed solution. One of the things that's noticeable is that in the full spectrum, we detected all of these anionic surfactant series with various alkyl chain lengths. Those are identified by repeating CH2 units, so I can basically add one CH2 unit, you add a link to the chain. And the idea is that you can easily identify series throughout these. They're highly present in the original solution. They didn't stick to the sorb sample so much, so you tend to see them a lot more in one solution than the other. The negative in working with this kind of sample is that, you know, the presence of the surfactants sort of inhibited what we could see in the original solution, hence we saw a lot fewer formulas in the original solution than we did in the sorbed organic matter. So our solution was that we would identify the formulas that are common to both, normalize them to 100% abundance, and then just look at compositional changes among things that were in both samples. And as you can see on the right, in most cases, if we could see it in the original solution, we saw it sorbed to the mineral surface, regardless of which fraction we're looking at. This slide is really meant to demonstrate, you know, that we do have different compositions in each of the fractions. These are Van Creveland diagrams. The y-axis is basically a hydrogen to carbon ratio, and the x-axis is an oxygen to carbon ratio. The idea with all of these is that you can plot and see all of your formulas in kind of a convenient way that gives you some idea of composition. The higher the H-to-C ratio, the more saturated the compound is. The lower, the more unsaturated. We have a line that kind of marks, you know, where you would expect compounds below it to be aromatic and above it to be mostly aliphatic. And what we did was we ranked all of the formulas in each sample by abundance. Then we divided the ranked formulas into quartiles, and we did it based on cumulative abundance rather than number of formulas, so that if you're looking at the dark blue, which is the top 25%, those are the most abundant formulas in the sample that comprise a total of 25%. The bottom 25% and light green are the least abundant formulas. And I think the key thing is you can see some differences, which you can look at in a more quantitative way as well, but the hydrophilic neutral fraction, which is the top right, tends to be more aliphatic than either of the samples on the left, and more oxygenated than the hydrophobic neutral fraction below it. I also wanted to show at least differences in elemental composition, and I think Okay, so I wanted to show that the hydrophilic neutral fraction has a very high number of nitrogen-containing formulas compared to all the other samples, and that the hydrophobic neutral fraction has a much higher number of carbon, hydrogen, and oxygen-containing formulas than all of the others. So we can see some differences in elemental composition as well between samples. So the way we determined sorptive fractionation was we wanted to determine changes in the composition between the original organic matter solution and the sorbed extract. So what we did was subtract the sorbed extract from the original solution. And the idea there was, you know, if you got a negative value, it would tell you that the compound preferred to be sorbed on the mineral surface. If you got a positive value, it would tell you that it preferred to remain in solution. All of these are common formulas, so they were all sorbed at least to some degree, but these are relative changes in composition between the common formulas. If there's no color, it means there was no change in that compound relative to the prior sample. And ultimately, we categorized these changes by magnitude so that, you know, the brighter red is the most sorbed and the darker blue is the least sorbed. And the part of the idea here is if we're seeing color at all, it means we are seeing some relative changes. If 50% of the carbon was sorbed, but the compositions were exactly the same because it was all non-selective, these graphs would be white. Okay, thank you. So the next thing we wanted to do was kind of quantify how much selectivity we saw. So what we did was basically aggregate all the sorbed and unsorbed formulas. And they're kind of shown there on the right. You can see the hydrophilic neutral fraction had quite a lot of selectivity relative to all the other samples. Then we form what we call sorption selectivity ratios, where we took the percentage on the right and divided by the total sorption, which was determined by total organic carbon analysis. That's sort of that sorbed DOC percentage to produce a ratio. And the idea is if the ratio is greater than 5, then there was more selective sorption than non-selective sorption. If it's less than 5, it's the opposite. And the hydrophilic neutral fraction is the one that was strongly selective relative to the other samples. Next, we wanted to look at it also by elemental composition because we saw that that varied between samples. Now the graph on the right, what it's really showing is all those categories we just saw, but now broken down in elemental composition. And because some of the bars were small, we did this in a way where you can more easily see it. The key point here is that carbon, hydrogen, and oxygen formulas preferred sorption in these samples, no matter which fraction you're looking at. As sulfur-containing formulas generally did not sorb. Well, everything sorbed again, but they preferred to remain in solution relative to the other compounds, and that includes a lot of surfactant derivatives that we saw. And finally, the nitrogen-containing formulas were split. We believe one of the reasons why some of them might not have sorbed well, especially in the hydrophilic neutral fraction, is because they might have been protonated at this low pH and therefore were especially hydrophilic and didn't want to interact with positively charged surfaces. And this is just an example of what the hydrophilic neutral fraction looks like. On the top right is the nitrogen-containing formulas, and you can see how split they are relative to the other samples. So, in conclusion, we really did see differences in the structural fractions, which was important for us to be able to test our hypothesis at all. The importance of selective versus non-selective sorption varied. It was selective was most strong in the hydrophilic neutral, then the hydrophobic neutral, and then the hydrophobic acid, and unfractionated samples were about the same. And elemental composition seemed to have a large effect on it. A large role in explaining differences between these samples. So I think the final conclusion is organic matter composition does appear to affect the relative degree of sorptive fractionation. So looking at the big picture, when we try to imagine what's sorbing to organic matter, the mineral type, the composition of the organic matter, and the concentration are all going to affect what sorbs. And it does look like non-selective sorption plays a key role, which kind of supports the zonal model I introduced at the beginning. And that's it. I thank my group and our funding sources.
Do we have time for a quick question?
Mm-hmm. Because you used sodium hydroxide to try to isolate the sorb fraction, did you need to re-acidify the solution because pH may affect the precipitation?
Yeah, we ultimately run all of our samples. We're doing negative ion modes. We do change the pH when we're running them, but so at least that for the FT-ICRMS analysis we did, yes.
Great. Thank you, Robert. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Let's thank Robert again.